Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Las Musas podcast. My name is Johnny Garzavilla, and I am the author of Ander and Santi Were Here. Today, I'm joined by El Gonzalez Rose and Jess Bada, and on today's episode of the Las Musas podcast, recorded at the closing of Latina Heritage Month, we'll be talking about Latina Lit, our visibility in publishing, the value of our books and stories, and reading Latina Lit all year round. So to start us off, El, can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your book?
Yeah, thank you so much. My name is El Gonzalez Rose. I am the author of Caught in a Bad Fomance from Joy Revolution Books, which comes out on December 5th, 2023. I'm also the author of 10 Things I Hate About Prom, which comes out also from Joy Revolution in May of 2024. And I also have a third book, The Girl You Know, which will come out in winter 2025 from Bloomsbury. That's me.
I am so excited for those books. I am Jess Barra, and I am the author of Ruby Ramos's Recipe for Success, which is a Cuban girl's guide to tea and tomorrow meets a SoCal version of the Great British Bake Off. And I am also the author of the upcoming The Quince Project, which comes out in May 2024, which is a YA reimagining of the classic J-Lo movie, The Wedding Planner, but with quinceañeras instead of weddings. And I'm so excited to, yeah, for that to come out.
Love it. And again, I'm Johnny Garzavilla. I wrote Ander and Santi Were Here, as well as the upcoming Canto Contigo, which comes out April 2024. And yeah, I love it. So many books coming out. I think that really sets a good positive tone for what I'm sure will be a very enlightening conversation today about Latina Lit, about reflecting on the end of Latina Heritage Month, and all things us as authors, as readers, storytellers, and all of that. So I think the first question that I wanted to talk about is our insights on what the state of the publishing industry looks like today in regards to Latina Lit.
It's funny that this question comes up because this has been, I think, going around a lot on social media very specifically that someone did this polling of recent book deals, I believe from like early 2022 to 2023. And it was just comparing the ethnicities, race of several deals that were announced in Publishers Marketplace. And it was actually shown there that the Latinx book deals, like we were the most underrepresented community. Is there, I believe it's that we make up 20%.
5% of,
make
yeah.
Up
I'm so glad you brought up this graphic. Oh my gosh.
Yes, I was like, gotta pull up that graphic because I believe it's that we make up 20% of the US population, but we are only 5% of all book deals, which is wild. And that kind of sums it up, what it is in the state of publishing. And even then, that's also not considering like the breakdown of, you know, like Latinx is not a race. So it's like the breaking up of like how many of these people are Afro-Latin, Indigenous Latins, White Latins. Like we don't even get into what that is there. So it's like, it's already a rough number, but like you can imagine like what it really looks like when you dig deep into the number. And it's already not looking great in terms of how well represented are we. And that's just, you know, right now, like deals that have been announced in the past year.
I'm just dying because, yeah, like when I was thinking about this question, I was thinking about how, especially in Kids Lit, I was like, I know everybody. I know all of the authors in Kids Lit, which is like great. But then it's also reflective of the fact that how small the, you know, the people that are Latina writing these types of books there is. Cause it's like when I scroll through different social media and I see like the grids of all these books, and it's like, I don't know all of those people, but I know every single person, you know, or like know of them, that I'm, you know, an acquaintance of, if not like a friend or a friend of a friend of like all of the Latina authors, which is wild to me because it's like, I could go into any bookstore and see a bunch of like the white fantasies and not know who these people are, but I could go in and see all of my friends, and it's, yeah, there needs to be more. From outwardly, I think sometimes people think, oh, there's like, look at this explosion of, you know, all these new books, but it's a very small community from like the same people like who are still in the game putting out books after books.
I think I actually even had a conversation. I can't remember with who. Someone in publishing who asked me like, oh, you know, there's this other Latinx author. I was like, oh yeah, we know each other. And we don't write the same thing at all. We're just both in YA. Like we write totally different genres. And she was like, oh wow, like I'm surprised you two know each other. And I'm like, well, there's not many of us. So we tend to find each other. It's like, we tend to find community in the fact that there are not that many of us in the first place. So I might as well be friendly with everybody.
Right. Even, and like Johnny and I are on the same imprint currently. And when they, like, for his, like, Hispanic Heritage Month or Latinx Heritage Month, they had something of like, oh, like Latinx books to pre-order. And it was three books, I think. It was like Johnny, Romina, and I think myself. I think those were like the three books.
Right. Yeah.
I think the answer in short is it's getting better, but it's still not great.
It's still rough out here.
Yeah.
And I think even more so just with the state of like society in general, and you know, the fact that we're fighting to have our stories even just in libraries and classrooms. And I think it kind of, at least maybe like some insights that like I've seen is that like, you know, sometimes, I mean, there are definitely those librarians that fight for us that are fighting to have our books up on the shelves, but like there are also percentages of librarians where that percentage is going up of like, it's a diverse book, so I'm just not going to put it on my shelf because it's easier to just not put it on the shelf and avoid conflict than it is to try to. And, you know, and I think even within publishing, there's not necessarily a huge push, I think, or a huge like voice coming from publishing, trying to defend us too, trying to defend the money that they're spending on authors like us. And it's, you know, where are they behind us or on our side trying to get, you know, where are they in this fight in book banning and against diverse voices in schools and libraries. So I feel like we really have just different sides of trying to make sense of it all and trying to get books into readers' hands in a way that's just really complex and not necessarily, I think, something that we envisioned our careers looking like whenever we just wanted to tell stories about, you know, about kids falling in love and cooking and all of these sort of things. Yeah, it's rough out here, I think, just in short. Next, I think I wanted to kind of talk about like why Latina Lit might be something that is just like overlooked and has been overlooked, you know, when it's not between September 15th to October 15th, or maybe like when it's not Cinco de Mayo or something. Like, why is it like we need special weeks or days to kind of have a celebratory focus on Latina Lit?
I think there's such a hesitance sometimes in readers who aren't coming into Lit with an open mind to learn new things about, you know, new cultures. We have our, you know, we have multiple languages in Latina culture, and maybe they're just not open to reading about those experiences because they think, you know, some people might have this idea in their mind that, oh, Latina Lit is going to be inaccessible to people who are not Latinx or not a part of the culture because of things like, oh, you know, we're going to have our portions of our book are going to be in Spanish. There are going to be mentions of food and customs that I'm not going to understand. And I think that when there does exist that kind of pool of readers, they're just not going to be interested in our books. I think that there has to be some willingness to open your mind up to reading about an experience that might not be an exact match to your own. And sometimes you might be surprised to read a book by a Latina author and be like, oh, you know, there's nothing unusual about this experience, but this is a really enriching read. So I think that might be the biggest kind of barrier in my mind, and you know, I'm sure there are many, many others, but just this idea of otherness and an unwillingness to kind of try something new, the same way that some people don't want to try different foods because they find them, you know, I don't know what it's going to taste like, what if I don't like it, it seems intimidating. It's the same thing I think with literature. There are just some people are not open to experiencing new things and trying something different and seeing how they feel about it.
I agree with that. And I also agree with something Johnny touched on earlier about just the people that, you know, are giving access to books. So whether that's a retailer or like the librarians, I think there's a hesitancy on that on their part as well for like different reasons. I think for with all of the book bannings, like librarians, yeah, they might not be able to have access to these books and give them to readers. And like for some retailers, they might think, oh, there's not a market for this, even though there's a huge market for it. And since it's a business, maybe they think it's a much safer and more profitable bet to stock the new White Lady Fantasy over a book that is not that. So it's really complicated. Now I'm starting to get a little dejected because it's, yeah, it like exactly what Johnny said. It's not going into it. I really thought, okay, you know, like I knew I had to work 10 times harder than everybody else to get where I am. I didn't make the connection that everybody else, including the team at the publisher, has to work 20 times harder to then get the book out there. And that was like something I'm learning now in my debut year. So it's just hard because I feel like no matter what we do, there is so much outside of our control. And that is, yeah, just like society and the market and different factors that we have absolutely nothing that we could do. So it's hard.
Yeah, I think both of y'all raise incredibly valid points. I think, like, you know, with marketing and with stores, and I think even with publishing, like, you know, we're seen as just like, what, how is it affecting their wallets? How is it affecting their bank accounts? What are they earning by putting us out there? You know, and I think it kind of relates in the same way to like how we see a lot of queer books coming out in like May and June, how we saw like this sort of faux support of Black authors during the Black Lives Matter movement, like all of these sort of things in which it, like, capitalism seems to be able to stand side by side with historically marginalized and underrepresented and forgotten about communities up until the point in which they don't need to anymore. And so, like, you know, when it comes to something like Latina Heritage Month, they see a sales bonus because people are already looking for ways in which to, you know, either, you know, whether it's being actual activist or faux activist for a few weeks, like, are seeking to indulge themselves in our communities. And sometimes that means in our stories and in our books, you know, and like places like Target or Barnes and Noble can be like, cool, let's bank off that. People like our publishing industry can be like, cool, let's bank on that too. But I think also when it comes to readership, I think you make a solid point too, Elle. And I often think about like a specific really well-known author who like came to bat for American Dirt because she said that, you know, it's a necessity that white authors write our experiences because that's going to bring white readers into the fold because they don't want to read stories written by us. They want to read stories written by them. And, you know, and I continue to believe that that is incredibly false, but like, you know, I do also believe that there is a sort of truthfulness to the fact that there are some white readers who will read our stories based on whether or not that author's name sounds like someone they would want to go to brunch with. So like, you know, I think there's a really big give and take and a really big like way in which we as authors are forced to change how readership views us and our stories and even our lives. And I think that kind of, it doesn't stop at Latinas. Obviously it includes, again, every single kind of like marginalized group. But yeah, I think that, like, you know, we're kind of, whenever we can be gift wrapped into something cute and sparkly and red, white, and green, or red, blue, and gold, like, then they're like, cool, let's do that. But it seems like, yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons why we're overlooked. And I think that just the conversation on how to get people to pay attention to us in that way, I don't know if there's necessarily an answer for that. You know, again, especially under capitalism. But I think just, you know, again, going back to just hearing us and talking about like how we have books coming out this year, next year, Elle's book in 2025, like, okay, well, here's one way. We're just going to keep on putting books on the shelves until we are just unignorable, I think is the best way in which we can try to fight that overlooked sort of scenario.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you brought that up about that certain author and that certain book. Because I actually had an experience recently where I was reading a book that was written by a white author that starred a character of color and like a character with multiple marginalized identities. And it talked about being, you know, the only person of color in a town and things like that. And I was just losing my mind because I was like, I can't believe this white author is writing about this. Wow. Like, I just can't believe this, that in this book was not that old. It was a somewhat recent book of a lot of critical acclaim by a very successful author. And so I have Goodreads blocked. I don't want to know what goes on there. I don't want to see any of my reviews. So I was trying to find a way. I had my partner look up reviews of this book because I was so curious if that was a big point of controversy, because I didn't know this about this book at all, but I had seen lots of people, you know, talking about reading this book and whatnot. And the only thing that I saw in relation to that is this book being praised as diverse. And I just was flabbergasted, because why, when readers read a book by a white author starring a character of color, is it diverse? But when we write from our own experiences, our characters are seen as unrelatable. It's just so strange to me that when it's fed through a white gaze, it's seen as palatable, But when it's coming from an authentic source where people are so willing to write it off, I just don't understand it. I shouldn't be surprised, but it was just, you know, truly wild to see it laid out this way. Like, that is exactly how it is, where I have seen books written by Black authors that have gotten that critique of their main characters, who are talking about the exact same themes in the exact same genre, getting these kinds of critiques, and they're never being praised for being diverse. There's anything, they're getting flack for having a genuinely diverse piece of work. And I think that that is just such a strange issue that we have, and something that really needs to be examined in readership and the ways that these books are marketed. And, you know, not even getting into the question of, you know, who's writing what story, because of course I have my opinions on that too. Outside of that, it's like, how are these books being perceived by readership is such a strange thing that I just don't understand. I'm still perplexed about this book, and it's been like a week.
You have to drop the name of the book in our chat, like right here in the Zoom.
I have a guess. It's
I have a guess too, because it's like, so okay, every time there's like like a white author and they write anything about cilantro or queso, my head explodes. Like, it's just, so it's like, that's just like shorthand with like, now me and my best friend, where it's like, we find like a, you know, that we can never ever say publicly, call these people out or even have a call in with these people. But we always, it's just shorthand now. It's like, if it's problematic, we'll just say, oh, it's carne y queso. Like that's like all, or carne, cilantro and queso. Cause it's always that, it's always one of those that, but I also have a, yeah, because this book, when I read it, I think we could all drop which ones, because I'm sure there are so many where like this issue comes up that we're probably going to all write something different. But there was one that is like very, very highly acclaimed, very popular. And I'm just like, okay, this is bad though. Like, it's wild to me. But yeah, like what Johnny was saying, I don't think that there are really solutions, right? Like, this is just going to keep happening. And the only thing that we can do, I think, is like, keep on populating those bookshelves until like there's, you know, the basic brown book, like there's like a million basic white books. So it's like, I just want to be able to have like enough stories out there that there could be just books that I don't enjoy as well, but just like be able to tell our stories, whether there just needs to be more.
Absolutely. And I feel like that's probably going to be a something that is repeated over and over again, this conversation. But fully, we need more. I think, huge bullet point bolded for this conversation today, I think.
If you're going to walk away with anything,
know
that there needs to be more.
And I think maybe, like, on that note, maybe like we can talk about, like, how different communities benefit from reading Latina lit. It can be, like, either, like, Latina communities, the audiences that maybe we write for specifically, those that, you know, kind of just grab our books regardless because they read contemporary YA. You know, it can be really any sort of community is broad in this sort of question.
I think a lot of what other communities outside of Latina communities can learn is like just confronting certain stereotypes and also just a greater understanding of the diversity within Latina culture itself. Like, you know, I could read a book by a Latina author who's not Puerto Rican and I will learn so much about their food and their culture and their customs. And like, if someone read a book by a Puerto Rican author, they'd learn about our food, our customs, the dialect of Spanish that we speak. Like, there is such a variety. We are so not a monolith. And the way you can know that is if you look up the how many different ways in Spanish you can say the word popcorn. So we are so varied in our experiences. And I think that that's something that people outside of the Latina community do not understand, but we know so intimately, is that we are all so, so different and have our, you know, our couple of shared experiences, but there's so much to learn. And it's just all such rich, beautiful history and context, and all of it's just so wonderful. And I can't believe that anyone doesn't want to absorb all of this information, because I find it so fascinating to learn about how, you know, we can all be Latina and we can all be Latinx, but we can have such different experiences. And I think that's just amazing. I hope that more people will be interested in learning more about that.
That's such a great answer. And I also think that it's like, because we're not all a monolith. And then within the different countries, like it's not a monolith. So it's like growing up, it's like, I never felt Cuban enough. And I think that's one of the reasons why I wrote Ruby to work out, you know, like my Afro-Cuban side, because the Cubans that I saw growing up were like Ricky Ricardo and Cameron Diaz. You know, it wasn't until recently that we got like the Gina Torreses and the Rosario Dawsons, people that like looked more like me. And even in the Cuban communities that I grew up with, they would, you know, not be the best sometimes because of colorism or texturism. And so I think like having those uncomfortable conversations too is important. So then other Latins could see themselves in that and be like, I see you. Like there's like this great Dominican movie, like, and I don't remember like the name off the top of my head, but it was about a quinceañera, and I think the book is called like Medium Vice or something like that. It's great. I'm gonna have to look it up and then drop it in the chat. But it was about, yeah, like being biracial, like a biracial Dominican, and about like colorism and texturism, and that changed my life watching that because I've never felt so seen. So that, and I think just for other readers too, it's important for them to learn that we're just not all pain and we're not all immigration stories. It was really important for me in book two. And, you know, I needed to work out some of my diaspora issues in Ruby. So that's why I did that. But in book two, I was just like, I want to just talk about fandom. You know, I don't want it to be like a quote unquote issue book having to do with identity, like Latine identity, and like trying to work that out. But that was something that I also worried about, because I'm like, does this book have enough Spanish? Like, am I gonna get, you know, flack for it's like sometimes I feel like you feel like there isn't enough of it or there's too much, and still get like, you know, criticized for it. So after I like, you know, work things out like on my own, I'm like, no, I'm just gonna write the story, because it's like I also contain multitudes, and sometimes I just want to go and cosplay in the Star Wars galaxy. So it's like there should be books, more nerdy books of like, you know, whatever. So yeah, I think it was really important to like showcase that we're a lot more than the American dirt type stories, which are not accurate anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Puerto Ricans, we don't even deal with immigration really, because we're American. So
but yeah, absolutely. Whenever I thought of this question, I thought of a trip I made to North Carolina recently for a book festival there, and it included some visits to high schools in the area. And it was my very first time doing like high school visits as an author. So, I mean, one, I was terrified, but the schools there, they were like majority BIPOC, majority Latina kids there who were there to see me speak, that I got to talk to. And it really just reminded me that, like, I think even just as a person who lives like in Texas, that like, you know, one, the Latina experience does not solely include Texas, Arizona, California, Florida, New York City. Like, it includes, you know, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Like, you are going to be hard pressed to find anywhere in the United States that is not rapidly growing in its Latina population. And being able to just be there among those kids who had never met an author before. I think one school had never had an author visit at all, period. And I was the very first one to. And like being able to talk to them and, you know, talk about our experiences. And, you know, as someone who also never met an author whenever I was in high school at all, especially not someone at all melanated, like, you know, we got to share and just like growing up. And like, even a lot of these kids, like, we gave them copies of my book, but also they weren't necessarily readers, that we got to talk about the ways in which art affects their lives, and, you know, song lyrics and graphic novels and things like that. And so I think, like, you know, especially when it comes to young people, and I think especially when it comes to BIPOC young people in communities like that, I think that, like, there is a benefit in Latina lit, but I think there's a benefit in just Latina media in general when it comes to graphic novels, for sure. Like, there needs to be way more graphic novels in the YA space, point blank. Like, you know, when it comes to song lyrics and how that's storytelling in itself, and all of these different ways in which we can see ourselves represented and tie into the books that we tell. But also, like, I fully understand that probably most of the people that read my books are going to be white. They're probably going to be fellow millennials. And so, like, in that way, I don't necessarily ever intend to write a book that is like gravitating towards them, or even wants to like recognize that like this is the majority of my audience, because that's not ever who I specifically write for. But in that way, I think that, like, you know, whenever I incorporate Spanish, that's not italicized, and whenever I just like write what I see as the truth and just how we interact in our daily lives without necessarily needing to placate to an audience that does not look like me or have a name like me or grew up like me or a family like me. Like I can just do it and, you know, and, you know, really respond to the way in which our country is growing into something that is more diverse and is more multilingual, more Spanish speaking. And so I think like in that way, the communities that do already read our book that are definitely not necessarily the people that we envision whenever we write our books, I'm hoping that at least they take away something from that that's not just, you know, I love reading YA, which is incredible and great, you know, from the get-go, but also like when you read diverse literature, like really just, especially when you're white, like, you know, gravitating and just being able to let yourself sit in that space, that recognizing that it is not necessarily for you first, but that you are definitely invited into it. You know, you spend your $20, sure, come into my space. But like recognizing that it is never at all for you first and something in which that you are going to be a guest in, regardless of if you spend human money on that book, I think needs to be the way in which you consume media by diverse authors, by Latina authors.
Yeah, I think you just like hit the nail on the head about with my what I was saying earlier. It's just, you know, it's okay sometimes the media is not for you.
Exactly. It can, I think like a lot of times too, especially when it comes to contemporary literature, like you can recognize the fact that like, you know, there are diverse stories, but also there are so many things in which so many canon events in our lives are universal experiences too. And we all are just going through the same things in this life. And whether or not like we are Latina or any other sort of background, like some experiences are just human experiences. And like, you know, it's important that we recognize how that looks similar, but also looks different based on our lived experiences. Yeah, I think that I would like to, actually, because I think we had this like this comment from Jess too that really lended itself to like, I want to get into some real talk about like Latina lit, and, you know, tokenization and representation and expectation, and all of these sort of things that kind of just like are expectations of us as writers that we, you know, again, as a conglomerate of people that are not necessarily at all similar. Because it is fully the majority of land on the Western Hemisphere, plus Texas up to Oregon, and sort of land occupied at one point, and then generations of people just living here too. Like the way in which like we are commodified as a single source really does not fit. And just the ways in which that kind of implodes and we have to handle that. Yeah, just a conversation on the crappiness that is sometimes our experience as authors.
Ooh, well, okay. Since I was the shady one to like bring it up, I think, yeah, I think this might've been like before we started recording, but for me, what has been like real is that, like that my expectation and the realities of it. So again, it's like, I expected that as a BIPOC creator, there would be a certain level of care, because it's like, we're not starting at the same starting line, right? As some other creators, we're starting behind the starting line. And I don't know why I thought that, but maybe I am secretly an optimist. And I thought that the realities of the world and capitalism would mean that, you know, publishers or imprints or retailers would, yeah, that they would have a better attention to care to try to get our stories out. Because if it is capitalism, you would think that they would want to get their money back, right? But then it's like the resources aren't fairly allocated. That's like one thing that I've, and even when, yeah, it's just bizarre, because one of the real talk things too, like I always thought that in publishing, advance size equaled where you are on the list, and that turned out to not be true. No one told me that. I just think this entire year, my debut year, has just been like a giant learning curve. So yeah, like as far as like tokenism and having, I've had conversations before with like people like in publishing and told them, you know, I'm not Mexican, right? Like, and these are like professional people. And so, yeah, like I have felt tokenized before. Like there was like, this is like real talk. For example, doing my cover, it's like I just recently revealed a cover for Quince Project this week, and it's drastically different than Ruby. And I think there's a lot of market reasons for that. Like one of them is like, I think cover trends are going to be changing over like the next year. But a lot of it too, I was like, okay, is this also, you know, with Ruby, we were like, went hard to really signal what type of book this is by having, you know, a Latina's name on the cover, dark skin, textured hair. And for the next one, there's nothing to signal. There is like, you know, the word Spanish, Quince is in it, is in Spanish, but there's nothing really. So it's like sort of like the opposite. And I did wonder if that was intentional above and beyond just shifting trends in color, cover illustrations, right? People could read in between the lines of like what I'm saying there. But in the early concept designs, there was something that was presented that had like a mariachi arm in it. And so I'm like, is this just like a concept sketch of Johnny's cover that then they're like, oh, let's put it on for Jess. Like one of Johnny's like rejected, you know, cover choices. Because I'm like, there is nothing in my book that has a mariachi in it. So like, why is this here type of thing? So it's just bizarre. I feel like to protect myself, like I have to constantly, and my agent constantly has to be advocating on my behalf to try to present what I want to present. Because again, if I were to just leave it in like the hands of publishing and capitalism, it would not be what I intended to put out there. So it's just, it's hard.
Yeah, I think like one moment that struck me, I have so much to say about that specifically, but like a moment that you had mentioned earlier too about like incorporating Spanish in books as a Latina author, like really like I think kind of had a light bulb moment for me on this topic of Real Talk, because you know I've had conversations with friends, with fellow queer Mexican authors who like their publisher was like, why do you not have Spanish in your book? And he's like, it's because I'm a fifth generation Mexican and we don't really talk Spanish at home because we've been here for 100 centuries. And they're like, well, you need to incorporate Spanish because their character's Mexican. And it's like, wow, that's awful. But then at the other side, you get like, okay, you're incorporating so much Spanish, but you're not letting people know what this is. And so it's like, we've kind of given this system of like, it has to be Spanish in it, otherwise it's not Latina, but you can't have too much Spanish in it, otherwise you're not welcoming other communities into this book. And so it's like where in which like publishing sees the authentic Latina, quote unquote, and we can't divert from that, otherwise it doesn't meet their standards of not even authenticity, but of where their sales can come in, of like it's just diverse enough without being too colorful for people who are unfamiliar with our culture. And so that really clicked with me of like, yeah, like this is a fully messed up topic. And I think we need to talk about that for a second. If you had a bounce off fully.
Well, I think it gets even wilder when you have intersections, right, in your book, like absolutely. An intersectionality in your book, because then it's like, for it's like, and also people, one of the things that is just like wild to me in publishing is how much of yourself do you have to put out there for people to, I don't know, like, so I'll just be real. So for, like, I definitely am, you know, in several intersectionalities, I would think. So in Ruby, it was like, there's a queer character and I got flack for like, oh, it not being going so deep into that. But it was like, I wasn't ready to go that deep into it. So it's like, how much of myself or how much of ourselves, like, is it exactly what you're saying, is expected to go in the book to make it a quote unquote, like authentic experience. So now it's like, okay, like for book two, the second romance is a queer romance like in the book. And so it's like, but it was also wild because for marketing purposes, and again, I think that this, because of the book banning stuff, might be the right choice, but that was that's not in the jacket copy, right? Like the queerness of the book, it was completely left out. And it's like, oh, it could be maybe a nice surprise for readers to find out. So it's like, I think it was smart in some ways, but I'm also like, is this also shady though? Because it's like, I'm afraid that people might come at me for not being, or for not me, because it's not my, I don't control that, for the way it's marketed. And, mm-hmm. and sometimes, yeah, just like the way a book is marketed, for all of my two books, it's like, I feel that they're very much coming of age novels, you know, with romance subplots, but because the market is so heavily geared to romance, I think there's the tendency to try to flip those two things and make it a romance with like coming of age subplots. And so, but that isn't accurate. And I think that maybe sometimes that could hurt books because readers going into it for a pure romance are going to come away disappointed because it's like, I like talking about the meatier issues and the romance is fun, but again, that's like not my concern. Like I don't care about it as much as I do family issues or issues between like siblings and like, you know, different things. And so yeah, it's just wild to me because I feel always caught in not doing enough of some things or doing too, and then it getting marketed in a different way. I don't know. It's if that makes any sense at all.
Boy, do I have thoughts on this.
Like another common Jess W. Like, yeah, absolutely.
Yes, 100%. I've like everything that you both have said, I 100% agree with. Like just to talk on the first point that was made, I definitely had that experience when I was writing my debut of like, can you sprinkle in a little more like Latinx-ness? Like they would be listening to the radio in the car and it's like, well, this song could be in Spanish. And I was like, we listen to music in English too. Like why does it, I don't want it to feel ham-fisted because I feel like sometimes you can tell when a Latinx author has been told to kind of like up it up a little bit, like it will feel inauthentic sometimes. And I was like, I want this to be authentic to our experience. So, you know, we're not eating like ropa vieja like every single night because that takes a long time to make. Like, you know, we're not having all these things every single night. We're not listening to Spanish music on the radio all the time. But then at the same time, we're being told like cut back on the Spanish. And it's like, well, that's the most authentic part of this experience because when we're talking shit, we're going to talk in Spanish. And I'm doing my best to give the context for the situation. But you know, it's like, what is the balance here? Like, you want it to feel like just other enough that it's exciting and exotic, but not really true to the experience of what we're living. And really, I don't think there really should be any critique, like, I mean, within reason, of Latinas writing about their own experience, because it's our experience, and no experience is going to be the same. You know, it all depends on, there are some books, like you were saying, Johnny, earlier, like, there are some people who do not speak Spanish in their house. Most of my cousins do not speak Spanish. I'm the only one who can speak fluent Spanish. And that's just because of, you know, what my household was like. But we are the same family, but we, you know, most of us don't speak Spanish. I'm the only one who speaks Spanish. So I love seeing, actually, I was just telling Ella Cerón, who wrote Viva Lola Espinosa, that I love seeing more rep of kids who just are not good at Spanish. That's just so needed because it's an experience that a lot of Latina kids have. And it wasn't even my experience, but I can still appreciate when I see it because I know like, wow, that's what my cousins went through. And that's a really authentic experience for a lot of people because they may have been here for a lot of generations, or maybe they live in a place where they don't have a lot of family. The only reason I speak a lot of Spanish is because I have a lot of family nearby that I can talk to, or other people who are maybe mixed or who they live far away from their family. They're not as in touch with their culture as someone else might be. And that doesn't make them or their work any less Latine than if someone like me who lives around the corner from their abuela. It's all valid experiences. And there's no cookie cutter or quota that we should need to hit of like Latina references in our books. They can just exist how we want them to exist because it's our own identity. And as someone who has also two queer Latina books, I relate a lot to what you were saying, Jess, about like how much of yourself are you expected to reveal? Because I've tried to make it as clear as I can on my social media that I am openly queer, but there is only so much that I can say and do in the world because of my upbringing and my experiences as a person who is not just queer and not just Latina, but someone who is queer and Latina. And I think that people so often forget that just being queer and just being Latina, like it is not two separate things. These identities coexist in such a specific way that is going to be so different to so many people. The same way that queerness is one size doesn't fit all, queer Latinaness is not one size fits all. And I think that there's just this demand that you do certain things. And I know that I've made certain decisions in my publishing career that were very specific to my experience as a queer Latina person, that it has impacted my work. It impacts the way that I write my queer Latina relationships. And I think people often forget that. They forget that these two identities coexist in a very, very specific way. And it really impacts a lot of what I do and what I feel comfortable saying in certain situations and how I'll behave depending on the scenario. And that's just so often forgotten. And also something that I notice is sometimes, you know, it feels a lot of the time like my book either exists as queer or exists as Latina. And I think that people tend to forget that it is both because that's how I choose to market it. It's very important to me that I say that it is both of these things. And I think even when I was working on the cover, I said, you know, the love interest in the book is also biracial. He is mixed Korean and Cuban. And I said, when we were working on this, I was like, I want you to see both of the characters because I want you to see that these are two kids of color that are in a queer relationship. I think that's really important to me that you see both of them. I don't want it to be like one person with their back to the book so you can't really see them. And that was really important to me. And then yet it still happens that they get separated out. And I don't know, people can just be weird about these things and expect a lot from you. And I don't get it. I don't agree with it with anyone of any identity expecting someone to be a perfect cookie cutter of whatever you want them to be, whether it be queer, whether it be Latina, whatever identity that they have. But it's exhausting. It's the conclusion that I have.
Yeah, I think touching on that sort of like intersectionality too, and just the ways in which like that becomes more even like of a hyper specificity, and I think especially in publishing too becomes a sort of like, how can we give the bare minimum of intersectionality and just, you know, let it be at the bare minimum? I think like as, especially as like a queer Mexican writer, I often talk about how, you know, I think it's gonna be a great day whenever books like mine, like Sonora Reyes's, like Aaron Aceves's and Daniel's, you know, that like we aren't immediately, from publishing standpoints and from I think a lot of reading standpoints and reader standpoint viewpoints, of like when we can stop being compared to Aristotle and Dante, and like when like we can realize that like there are many, or not a lot, but there are many now queer Mexican YA books, and like, you know, there doesn't need to be a sort of guideline of like this one is the standard, this one is the representative, you know, and in a way that like, I mean, my Under and Santi was fully comped to it, you know, and it wasn't necessarily a comp that I wanted, but it was one that they were like, no, we got to, because obviously, you know, I was like, obviously what, like you want to explain that, but you know, it ended up on the back anyway, and whether or not that is a good comp or an accurate comp, I, you know, sure, yeah, a historical fiction book is a great comp for a contemporary work of fiction, but yeah, like I think that like in both publishing and sometimes reader viewpoints, like if they're just so eager to kind of minimalize us into a specific sort of idea that does not see us or our characters humanity and just kind of sees us as our identities. And then I think too, like I fully got like Jess's point with the cover and just like trying to meet, again, publishing's viewpoints of, you know, what a cover should look like, especially by a marginalized author. Especially when it came to Canto Contigo, originally, like the one thing that I really envisioned for that cover was that there were going to be two queer boys that were dressed in mariachi charros. And when we got our cover back, they were not in charros, and it was because, you know, things that we were told, because music doesn't sell, and you know, that is a music outfit, quote unquote, to them, which confused me, because the title is Canto Contigo, one of those words literally means sing. The first, you know, there's a mariachi, the word mariachi is in the first sentence of the description on the back of the book. So like, I'm not sure if they're trying to fool teenagers in that way of like, got you, like it's actually about music. And you know, so it was like, no, like one, they're gonna know, and two, like mariachi charros are not the same as marching band outfits. Like these are, it, sure, it's a music thing, but it's also very much a cultural thing, and like we can't put those together. And even then, like if sales tank because you have a guitar on the cover, like point us to where those sales tank for a guitar on the cover of a Latina YA book, because you can't, because that does not exist. And so like, you know, there were, the longer we had this conversation, it felt more and more icky of like, it doesn't seem like you're actually talking about the music you don't want on this cover. It sounds like you're just trying to make them as appealing and as one note, broadly speaking, rather than like putting them in charros and showing a hyper specificity of one singular culture, you know, and in that way felt tokenized. And I think in a very different way too, with Ander and Santi were here, like I, you know, wrote an immigration book that they were really excited about. And then you get a book where I just wanted to write about music and maybe a little bit of grief. And the sort of response I'm getting, not necessarily from, you know, my editor who has been really great, but like from people I think who have a say in the money that's spent in publishing and the really higher ups, there's been a very different perspective on the excitement level of my book because it's not an issue book anymore. And, you know, and it does definitely feel like my issue book was given a lot more value from the get-go. And, you know, I think the expectations were set a little bit higher, whereas versus this one coming out in April, low expectations. And so it's like, well, like, you know, I think, do we only have value whenever you can see our suffering, whenever you can see our separation, whenever you can see those emotions in a way that like makes us the you know, the point of grief and trauma, especially. And I think in that, especially in the trauma, is a huge tokenization that I think Latina authors have to face, and especially just broadly, again, any sort of marginalized authors have to face, of like the more trauma we can add in our experience of these characters, the more tokenized they're going to make us. Yeah. And so, you know,
yeah. I was gonna say, like, this wasn't my experience with my publisher. I'm very lucky. Like, nothing bad I've said has been about my editor, who has been amazing. I'm very lucky that, you know, I'm at an imprint that focuses specifically on stories starring characters of color that do not have to do with trauma and is about joy. It's called Joy Revolution. But I remember when I was in college, you know, as soon as, you know, it was made very clear that I was Latina, there was this expectation to write about trauma and pain and about things that had happened in my family that were super traumatic or, you know, wild to read about. Kind of like I felt like I was like a lion in a zoo. It's like, it's an opportunity to see, you know, an exotic culture that maybe you've never seen before. And the expectation was that I would write about these very, very serious topics in relation to my identity. And when I tried to write something more lighthearted or something happier that focused on like the beauty of being a Latina person, that was seen as kind of pointless in a lot of ways. I was like, well, what's the message of this? I was like, well, the message is that we're happy sometimes. Like sometimes that's the message and that's the end of it. There's a deeper message when you have Latina characters. It does not have to be some type of teaching moment for you. Sometimes the message is, you know, in Caught in a Bad Moments, it's, you know, lots of different smaller messages, but really what I wanted that book to be was to be a very joyful queer Latina book where the issues that the family has do not have to do with their identities. It doesn't have to do with the fact that they're Latina. It doesn't have to do with the fact that they're queer. They have their own interpersonal issues that they're working on as a family. And I think that that's just something that's so often forgotten when it comes to Latina literature. You do not need us to have some kind of super important teaching moment. Sometimes we just want to have a good time. That's going back to this whole thing about having more literature. A big thing that I remember dealing with was getting the note that the book, they already had my book, you know, they already had a fake dating book. And it's like, well, do you have a queer Latina fake dating book? Like, do you have that? Yeah. And I was like, do you have that specifically? Like, that's, you know, I think that there's a really great breath of queer Latina lit right now. But off the top of my head, I do not know of one. And that it was like, I know you have a lot of maybe white fake dating books and white queer fake dating books, but this is a very specific story and its identities that I do not think is out there at the moment, or at the very least, it's not saturated. It certainly is not saturated. And that is just something that I think people forget. They just like will label it off, be like, no, it's predictable. We already have either our one Latina book, or they just write it off, not thinking about the importance of seeing your identity on the page and how impactful that can be.
I want to cry right now, but everything is so true. I've had even like a big author whose work has been, you know, adapted into movies and stuff, straight up tell me, if you want to sell faster and more, you have to write the trauma and the pain. And like for them, they're doing it and raking in the money because they're like sort of like gaming the system or whatever. Like it's intentional on their part, you know, what they're doing. And fine, that's their journey. But for me, like I was not able to do that. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, but then there's actual there's actual consequences to that, right? It's not only to that, so it's like I might, you know, not get the resources that someone writing about pain or the marketing and publicity push that like someone of that is. And then I think too, one of the things that I'm struggling with now is how much or how far could I keep on advocating and pushing for things like how far could I go? Because I worry of like, oh, if of being tokenized in a different way, of being in a way that impacts then who they sign next, you know, like, because it's like, then that could also potentially backlash, right? Like if I am always clapping back or doing something, it's like, I think it for, because of capitalism, they could be like, okay, fine. We just won't take your next book. And not only that, but we just will take someone that is quote unquote, like easier to work with, right? And we don't have to have these put in the extra, I guess, like work it does to try to treat like a marginalized author with care. So that's something that I'm thinking about now. And it's like every time that like something happens in publishing, I have to sit down and think, is it gonna like hurt me and hurt other people if I say something and fight for myself, you know? And I don't know if, so just, yeah, I think the takeaway of this conversation is that it, how much emotional labor too, that there is attached to this. And that was another thing that I was not expecting going into it. Again, I don't know why I didn't expect that. But it's hard because it's like, I shouldn't have to make those mental calculations to do something that's right. You know what I mean? But I feel like I have to, and I don't know, like it makes me really demoralized sometimes to do that, because it's like, I think going forward, I will maybe not speak up as much in order to protect myself and like the, and keep that door open for other people.
Yeah. I think based on what you're saying about demoralizing, like I had a moment the other day, like very recently, where I was looking like, you know, what my experience has been in like various aspects of publishing and before publishing and just what my career has been like, or ever since I started to write YA. And I was reflecting on, you know, I made a very conscious decision at the beginning of this process to write only Latina characters and as often as I can to write queer Latina characters. And that was because that was something that was very important to me. And that's the one thing that I have control over in this industry. I can write these books and I can keep true to these two values that I have. But so often I'm thinking, is it worth it? Like, why is it worth it? Because, you know, I'm mixed. I am also, you know, not Latina. And I was like, I could very easily change my name and just be a white person. And there's a lot of privilege in that. And that is something that I specifically want to talk about in my books. But that's a thing that I think a lot of people don't understand because they have a very distinct idea of what a Latina person is and what they experience. And I think it's important to call out the privileges that we do have. And I was like, you know, is it worth it? Is it just, I have a lot of privilege. I could do that. And I just still feel so strongly that I want to do this thing, that I want to write these characters that are so important to me and so emblematic of my experience and my life, because I grew up in an extremely Latinx household. And it's just so strange to have that question, to be like, is it worth it, about something as simple as your writing your identity? Is any of this worth it?
Yeah. That hurts. And I'll, like, I think it hurts mostly because it's like that truthfulness behind it. And you know what, maybe we'll navigate to something like a little more optimistic. Something that you, I think, had touched on briefly, Elle. Just, you know, what I think, like, what stories would we like to see in Latina Lit, and Latina Kid Lit, maybe specifically Latina YA Lit as YA authors, that we just aren't seeing yet? You know, what kind of things do we want to see in the future, next year, 5 years from now?
Oh gosh. I think like our bottom line again is just more, just so much more. I was like, I want to see Latina authors really get that big push. Like I want to see the next Latina Fourth Wing, you know, like I really want to see a Latina author really just be like Book Talk's biggest sensation or something like that. And not just one. I want it to be more than one. I want there to be many Latina authors that like, I think the biggest thing that I want is I want to struggle to give recommendations because there are so many good options. Because right now, if you ask me a specific question for Queer Latina Lit, I will rattle off a good 20 for you and it'll be easy because I'm like almost all of them. And I think that's something that I would like to see a lot more of is just diversity in, you know, Latina Lit. Like again, we are not a monolith. Like, you know, I know there are a lot of white Latins out there. I think it's important to get more Afro-Latina experiences out there, to get more Indigenous Latina experiences out there, because I think that they are completely very much overlooked in publishing specifically. So I think that's something that I really, really want to see more of, because they are a huge part of our culture as well.
Oh, that's such a good question. Yeah, I want to see also more international YA.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
because
for sure.
again, it's like I feel like, you know, like you said, Johnny, earlier, the focus is on like coastal and southern and western experiences. So yeah, like I want to, I not only like in the Midwest, and there's a lot of other states in California, you know, there's Latinas that live everywhere, but they also live everywhere in the world. And so it's like, and I want to get like YA from other countries, but then also other YA of just like, I, you know, when I go to London, I see other people that do look like me, you know, sometimes even more so. And so I just want more of it. I'm not just this bubble, because I think what we're like one of the, yeah, it's, isn't Spanish the second most spoken language or something like that, like in the world. So just more, because yeah. And just more of that intersectionality, I think too, like I don't think I've read, at least in the YA space, like a Latine disability book. I don't think I've seen that. So just more.
That was, yeah, for sure. That's true. Yeah. I think I would probably reiterate, like, I would love to see more graphic novels in the YA space written by Latina authors. But yeah, just a lot more intersectionalism, a lot more of those voices that are not being included yet in a way that I think, you know, certain sub Latina groups are. But yeah, and I think there's both reason to be optimistic about what is going to be on the shelves 5 years from now. But also I think like a lot of like insight into just, you know, being an author currently and the kind of sort of holding the fort down that we, I think, are being called to do in order to make sure that those sort of books happen. And I think maybe kind of sort of like on that particular note, fully closing on the idea that his Latina book should be read all year round, not just during Latina Heritage Month. And now that it is going to be over, by the time that this episode comes out, it will be over. I think it'd be like, if we want to shout out like a couple of Latina kid lit books that we think everyone listening should read, should go purchase immediately, go get at their library. Yeah, if there's any that you want to shout out, by all means.
Oh gosh, there are so many. I'm thinking specifically of like, of course, like the debuts that I've read, like they're all just so, so talented. I mean, obviously I've read all of your books, both of you, and they're all amazing. So I highly recommend both of you, both Jess Parra and Johnny Gozavia, please read their books. But I also want to give a shout out to, of course, my imprint friend, Angela Montoya, who has an absolutely fantastic Latinx fantasy called Sinner's Isle coming out. And it's just so good. It's getting so many star reviews, and I'm just so excited because it's getting the hype that it deserves. It's a really, really, really wonderful book. So gotta give a shout out there.
Okay, I'm going to shout out, since we are going to be entering spooky season. Well, we are in spooky season, but it's going to be Halloween soon. A Tall Dark Trouble is great. Also, I am looking at Our Shadows Have Claws, which is a YA horror anthology that is great, that does different stories featuring different monsters and folklore of different countries. And this is not YA, but it's probably like my favorite book, I think, right now. Olga Dies Dreaming by Xochitl Gonzalez.
Oh, yeah.
It is so good. And I think that does a perfect job of, yeah, there is some stuff of, you know, like Puerto Rican culture and identity, but it's just also about this messed up family. And it's really just like those dynamics that I think, you know, are universal. Like what Johnny said, it's like our stories are universal, you know? So that one is great. In middle grade, one of my favorites is Lupe Wang Won't Dance. By Donna, I can never pronounce anyone's last.
Yeah, it's fine. We stand Donna Madabayigeta in this house fully.
Okay, good. It's like that one is laugh out loud funny. I mean, I could go on. It's like all of my bookshelves are just covered by everyone, you know, are just populated by all of Las Musas in here. So yeah, there's so many great stories out there that people, you know, should be reading.
Yeah. I think also added to like the sort of fall vibes happening, as a ardent Crystal Maldonado stan, her next book, The Fall of Wit Rivera, comes out soon, which has all the autumnal vibes in it. I'm super excited to be reading it, and I think y'all should pre-order it and go get it. I every single time I'm able to shout out a book on the Las Musas podcast, I will be shouting out Lulu and Milagro's Search for Clarity by Angela Velez, because that is in my opinion, the best coming of age YA contemporary novel I've ever read in my entire life. And I think as far as 2022 books, Raquel Mori's You Don't Have a Shot, incredible, really gave me so much inspiration and push whenever I was having trouble writing my own Rivals to Lovers story. That one is absolutely perfect. And then I guess like slightly navigating from the YA space as well, Under and Santi Were Here has a lot of inspiration from Jose Olivares's poetry. He wrote Citizen Illegal and Promises of Gold is his newest collection of poetry. He's incredible. And if you're at all into poetry, would recommend him. I fully asked this question, but like, I love this question because I could spend hours just talking about all the other authors that we know. But I also want to highlight that you can fully right now pre-order Caught in a Bad Fomance by El Gonzalez Rose. You can purchase Ruby Ramos's Recipe for Success and Honor and Santi Were Here by Jess Bada and myself, wherever books are sold. So yeah, do that too, fully right now. And you know, again, read Latina all year round. Read diversely all year round. Fill your bookshelves with writers that aren't white, period. If there were any, you'll have any sort of closing remarks, anything that we may have not touched on that y'all want to?
One very small thing. It was something that I think we were considering discussing, but it was something that I thought about and I was just so struck by it, which is, you know, when people think about how do you incorporate more Latina literature kind of into either your curriculum if you're an educator or just if you're a reader, I think it is so important to remember that we are human and we have books about every experience. You know, there's not an incredible amount of Latina literature, unfortunately, but there is just such a rich tapestry of stories that do exist. You know, we talk a lot about how we want more, but I think it's important to also remember what we currently have. And I think that if you are thinking, you know, I really want a book about this, I really want to read a rom-com, I really want to read a fantasy, I really want to read a really hard-hitting coming-of-age novel, just, you know, look out there. There is probably a Latina story that exists like that. And I think that that's the thing, is just assuming that only the white experience exists for a lot of these different life milestones and whatnot is just not true. And if you want to incorporate things like Latina literature all year round, just if you're a mood reader, look for a Latina book, you know, that fits the mood that you're in. If you're an educator and you want to teach about, let's say like teen pregnancy, look it up. I know of at least one 2024 debut that I know does discuss that. I believe it's called Shut Up, This Is Serious by Carolina Ixta, I believe, that talks about something in that vein. And, you know, there are books out there that exist that you can find and you can incorporate them into your lives. It'll maybe sometimes take some digging, but we are here. We are always here. We're not going anywhere. And you can find us.
I love 100%.
That. Yeah, I think that's such an important thing to be said. That, yeah, they're more, but also we are out there. Like the books are there. Sometimes they're a little hard to find, but they are there. And that's just an important note.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's like you could Google search. It's fine. You Google search it. The other day I was like thinking people have, yeah, use Google. Google is good for the soul. No other comments other than I am so appreciative of y'all. And I am just, yeah, very, very grateful that, you know, we could come together and be real. I feel like this is the YA version of the publishing rodeo right now. You know, I don't know if y'all have listened to that podcast and a lot of people just want to cry after, but yeah, I'm just so glad that you guys are here and we were able to talk about some harder topics that I think, you know, haven't been previously discussed on other episodes.
Definitely. Thank y'all for being here. And yeah, we will call it a day. So if you'd like to learn more about Las Musas or our books, please visit our website at lasmusasbooks.com or find us on social media at Las Musas Books. And be sure to check out our bookshop page, bookshop.org, where each purchase of one of our books goes towards supporting independent bookstores. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. You can also sign up for the Las Musas newsletter to have podcast updates, as well as other Musa news, such as release dates, teasers, spotlights, and more delivered straight to your inbox. Thanks for listening.